Hello and welcome to this BJS podcast. I'm Wendy Barnaby, and today we'll be concentrating on the May 2018 issue and advanced, recurrent and metastatic colorectal cancer. And to discuss aspects of treatment, we're joined by the authors of the leading article in the issue, Professor Michael Solomon, Academic Head of the Department of Colorectal Surgery at the University of Sydney, and Dr. Killian Brown, PhD candidate in the Advanced Gastrointestinal Surgery Programme at the Royal Prince Alfred Hospital in the University of Sydney. Michael, let's start with you. At the moment, patients being considered for exenterative surgery are looked after by different multidisciplinary teams. How do you think that works?
Certainly when they're referred to centres that do exoneration, the multidisciplinary team is really one team involving multiple disciplines. I think that's a really important part of running an exoneration service. I think where they come from are often very diverse, whether they're from medical or radiation oncologists, general surgeons or colorectal surgeons, where they come from. But I think once they hit a service, it has to be one service which has multidisciplinary components to it.
That works very well. So there isn't any delay in deciding how the patient will be treated?
No, because most centres provide a large area. We provide it for our state and also for multiple other states in our country. So a lot of the discussion's been on a story that's or a referral that's come from somewhere with their x-rays. So we've already collectively discussed it before we've even seen the patient.
Right, and presumably then it is important once exenteration is being considered that everybody is in on that discussion.
Absolutely. Otherwise, particularly when you're moving people around countries, if you have someone who then changes the plan when they've come a long way, then that or wants more investigations at the last minute, then that becomes very dysfunctional.
One of the articles in the issue is from the PelVex collaboration, which reports results from 27 specialist centres who've treated nearly 1,200 patients with pelvic exenteration in the 10 years from 2004. And the report showed that an R0 resection was achieved in only about 55% of operations. So how do you think those results could be improved?
I think if it's primary, that one is purely on recurrent rectal cancer, and I think our goal is to be above 50%. If you're not doing R0s above 50%, then I think probably you're not doing it well. I think 2018, we're aiming for probably 71%, and if it's advanced primary, which that article's not, then it should be well over 80%. So I think it is a good way you can assess an exenteration centre or assess an audit yourself. I think the way we've done it over 20 years is to look at each compartment of the pelvis, of which there's five, and as you get bigger numbers, you can see where your weakness is, and the initial weakness in probably 15 years ago was in the sacrum, in the posterior compartment, and particularly in the lateral compartment where the nerves and the blood vessels, and I think you then have to address where those problem areas are. In our centres, we've gone from below 50% now up to around 60 to 70% in those compartments. So it usually comes down to patient selection, but not to rule out to be more radical and the surgical approach.
Right, it's a huge operation, isn't it? I mean, it takes months to recover from. How can you be sure it is in the patient's best interest?
Well, we've been certainly in our centre very interested in quality of life, and we now have quality of life of almost 400 prospective patients and also those that chose not to go ahead purely because they didn't want to go through the magnitude of the operation, not because we said they couldn't. So we've got a lot of, patient information, and informed consent is really important, and we have psycho-oncologists involved with them up front, and I think it's really being honest with your informed consent. About one in five people we see who have resectable tumours, once they understand the magnitude of the procedure, elect not to go ahead. And I think that's a good thing to have, not a bad thing to have, because I think they're making a final decision themselves.
Killian, can we turn to you now? In your leader, you note that locally advanced rectal cancer is managed differently in different places. So Western practice is to treat lateral pelvic lymph nodes with chemotherapy, but in Japan they tend to excise them. So what do you think we're dealing with here? Is it a different disease process or different populations or what?
I think really the difference in treatment strategies for low and advanced rectal tumours that we see in the East and the West has really come about mainly for historical reasons more than anything else. In Eastern centres, mainly in Japan, when they were taking up total mesorectal excision during the 1990s, they developed expertise with routine nerve-sparing lateral pelvic sidewall dissections, while at the same time, the early trials in neoadjuvant chemoradiotherapy were being conducted, mainly in the Western centres. And that was at a time when recurrence rates in the West, and particularly in some Scandinavian countries, were as high as 30%. And really, the chemoradiotherapy was needed to address that sort of high rate of recurrence, perhaps because of bad surgery. But I think what's more interesting, or what's relevant at the moment in this area, is the emerging data that we've seen that Western units in particular, I think, need to consider, which suggests that patients with enlarged pelvic nodes on pre-treatment imaging are at a significantly higher risk of local recurrence in the lateral compartment, in something in the range of 20 to 30% when treated only with chemoradiation and total mesorectal excision. And so whether Western centres need to be performing in that select group of patients lateral pelvic lymphadenectomy and needs to be addressed, but also whether in the Eastern centres a more selective approach to lateral node dissections rather than a sort of routine approach for all comers should be considered.
So really each area has something to learn from the other, you would say?
I think so, yeah.
I think they're all moving back to the same treatment paradigm, but they've put a lot of information. The West's been helped by the East and the East has been helped by the West, and I think they're now starting to move towards a more merged treatment.
Killian, in another paper, Yamashita and colleagues examined the role of biomarkers in the resection of colorectal liver metastases. How important do you think genetic medicine, molecular profiling, will come to be in guiding selection for chemotherapy or radiotherapy?
Well, I think it's really the future of systemic therapies in advanced colorectal cancer. In general, I think the overall reduction in cancer mortality that we've seen in the last few decades has been for two reasons. One is early detection of cancers, but the second is improvement in systemic therapies. In terms of the latter, I think, and the article that you mentioned touches on, is the targeted selection of patients for systemic therapies based on molecular profiles. And we've seen this in colorectal cancer with development of agents such as cetuximab and bevacizumab. We're already selecting patients with metastatic colorectal cancer for targeted systemic therapies based on these genetic profiles.
So, Michael, do you think that that's where research will go mainly in the next decade?
I think for advanced disease, which we're talking mainly about, we've gone from what we routinely said was incurable 20 years ago because we had no chemotherapy agents that worked. We didn't have very good data on liver resection and no one was even doing lung resections. I think everything's changed dramatically in 20 years, and what's actually making us more aggressive is better chemotherapy that downstages tumours. So I think targeted therapies are really going to, or tailored therapies to the actual tumour biology. So biopsies of the tumour, then tailor that on their genetic profile to that specific cancer to then turn what is previously called incurable now into curable disease in combination with targeted therapies and more radical surgery, I think is the way of the future.
And just in the present, what do you think colorectal surgeons will take from this issue of the BJS?
I think what we've got to say is that it's not the same old. There's been dramatic changes in 20 years, and we all can't be experts on everything. And I think we've got to understand that you can't say to a patient, just because you've learned for 20 years that disease is incurable in the pelvis or it's incurable in the liver, you just can't say from historical evidence and your practice that that isn't. I think they need to be referred for opinions on units that are used to treating that. And I think those units have to offer a very fast and a very good service to those centres, so it's not a laborious pathway for the patient to get that advice, or what often happens, it has to be even driven by the patient who doesn't accept that.
Well, thank you both very much indeed. And I'm afraid that's all we've got time for. So goodbye.